Welcome to the X-Men Test Podcast. My name is Willie Simpson.
My name is Sonia Rappaport.
And today, Sonia, we are back deep in the Phoenix Saga again. The second week of Phoenix Month with the fourth episode of Season 3, the 30th episode overall, the Phoenix Saga Part 2, The Dark Shroud.
Phew, that's a mouthful.
Yeah. These Phoenix Saga week titles are going to be long and
arduous.
Long and chewy.
We're going to get through them.
Yeah. So, just a brief recap from where we left off last week when we began Phoenix Month.
Mm-hmm.
Last week, the X-Men were in quite the predicament. They were blasted off into outer space on some pretty dubious mission instructions from Professor X, who's just got some vague visions. He's like, I need you to hijack a spaceship and go to outer space.
Right.
And they're like, well, are you sure? He's like, yeah. And they're like, okay.
And they do it.
Right, they do it. They go to outer space. A bunch of crazy stuff happens. You know, they go to a space station, and they confront this weird dude named Eric the Red. He's of the Shi'ar Empire. And long story short, they have to escape on the space shuttle, and Jean's the only one who can take charge and fly the space shuttle back to safety, because no one else can fly the space shuttle and live through all the radiation and all the other things that, you know, you need to do to land the space shuttle. So that's sort of where we left off. And also, we saw the Phoenix Firebird sort of zoom into the picture as well during the last climactic few seconds of that episode.
Right.
So now here we are. This episode picks up almost right where we left off from the last time.
Mm-hmm.
Jean Grey is still trying to land the space shuttle safely. She's got her little blue psychokinetic shield, as she calls it.
Mm-hmm. But she's struggling a little bit.
She's struggling. She's sort of knocked on her butt.
Yeah.
And she needs to flip a few more controls, but she can't quite do it. She's really... I guess that, you know, it's hard to do because she's got all she has is her psychokinetic shield, and there's G-force and radiation and, you know, violent movement. And
I guess, yeah.
Yeah. So she's having trouble, but luckily the Phoenix Force, the aforementioned Firebird from cosmic beyond land,
mm-hmm.
comes and flies into Jean. She's invigorated with this power. She's able to flip the controls, and the space shuttle comes careening towards New York City.
Right.
And Jean's sort of trying her best to land it, I guess.
She's doing it.
She clips the Chrysler building.
Just
which is,
a little. It just loses a little chunk. It's okay. It's still good.
I guess. I mean, but still, like, that's a big near miss right there.
Yeah.
And then she flies right through the Twin Towers.
Of course.
The our dearly departed original World Trade Center Twin Towers.
Yeah, yeah.
Always right. Weird to see in cartoons in the 90s.
Yeah,
because there was that
or
famous
any media.
Right.
Like,
yeah. Right. Yeah. There was that famous Simpsons episode where Homer goes to New York and his car is parked under the Twin Towers.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah, and there's a lot of weird Twin Towers gags in that episode, but here it's like the gag is that it's just, you know, it's the perfect like. Thing
well,
to fly
they're giving you place, right? Because
right,
like
right.
That's one of the iconic New York images.
Yeah.
So they're letting you know, like here they are back home in New York.
I feel like the Twin Towers are also featured prominently in the Spider-Man animated series from the same era.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Spider-Man is either swinging around them or you see them a lot. There might have actually been an episode of Spider-Man where another spaceship is flying towards the city. It goes through the Twin Towers or something.
Yeah.
One of the early ones with Venom, I think. But,
seems like such a near miss. Like, they were really close together.
Yeah. Actually, this one, they looked like inappropriately widely spaced apart.
Well, Jean's shuttle had to fit between them, so.
Yeah. Yeah, and so for those who want to hear us talk more about the Spider-Man Tash show, just wait till we finish this one. That'll be next. And a foreboding sense of gloom just crossed Sonya's face. But we will get there one day. Anyway, so she goes through the Twin Towers. Always weird to see, you know, a real relic of 90s.
Of our childhoods.
Right, yeah. And
yeah.
Both our childhoods. Have you ever been to... Did you ever go to the Twin Towers
yeah,
as a kid?
Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
I grew up in New York.
Right, yeah.
Yeah.
I remember I only went there once. And, you know, you go to the top floor and... you know, my mother used to work there, actually.
Yeah,
which is
I know.
Weird. But she wasn't there in 9/11. But anyway... I remember just being like Ferris Bueller as a kid when he's at the Sears Tower in that famous scene where he sort of clunks his head
uh-huh.
on the glass and just looks straight down.
Yeah.
I did that as like an 8-year-old. Or
yeah, you have to. I mean, I feel like everyone that goes up there, everyone that
right.
goes to like One World Trade Center now probably does that same exact
probably,
thing, right?
Yeah.
Like that's the novelty of being in a building like that.
Do you ever have a desire to go to the New World Trade Center? to the top of it?
Maybe one day. I don't know.
I really don't. I'm not that interested either.
There's just like, okay, New York is like a really cool city. We have like tons of awesome stuff to do, but there's just so many people doing all of those awesome things that like you can't really do them.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like yeah. You have to really commit like a day and a bunch of money to doing anything cool.
Yeah.
So, you know, like
I really don't have an excuse. Maybe one day. I work downtown.
Yeah.
And I'm right by the World Trade Center, the new one, and sometimes I walk by it and it actually is really stunningly tall. Like,
yeah.
You know, if you like walk right underneath and you look up, you can get like a small sense of vertigo.
Yeah.
But you know, it's bullshit. I think they charge like $30 to ride to the top, actually.
Yeah,
so it's kind of like, I'm not going to be suckered into paying.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah. Cause you're like, I'm from here. I shouldn't have to, but like,
and this whole thing, you know, I went to my mother, she doesn't live in the city anymore. She's retired to another state, and but when she came to visit me this last summer, she insisted on going to the 9/11 memorial and the museum they have there,
mm-hmm.
which is very tastefully done and very like sort of beautiful. But it, you know, for someone who lives in New York and works there to this day, it's like it's too much. You can't.
It's a sense of foreboding, or just like remembering what happened.
I mean, you walk into this place and they have all these voices coming at you from the ceiling, like in a stereoscopic like 3D sound collage, telling you like, I was there that day and I saw the bodies flying and the buildings burning.
Yeah.
It's like walking into a literal nightmare. Yeah. You're like,
I was in high school at the time. The buildings were burning and you could see them from like the classroom I was sitting in.
There
was like ashes raining down from the sky when they sent us home, you know? Like for all those reasons, I don't feel particularly compelled to go there. Maybe like 20 years I'll really want to. But.
Yeah. Yeah, that was like how I was sort of forced to go, and it was just like kind of horrible. I wanted to leave kind of right away.
Mm.
But anyway,
wow, we really got far off track on this one. Yeah. All right, so...
Yeah, back to the Phoenix here. So the X-Men, they crash into, I guess, the Hudson, right?
Yeah.
And this is pretty much what happens in the comic book, you know, with a little bit of a different lineup with the X-Men. They crash into the Hudson. They make a daring escape from their man... solar probe thing. They all merge to the surface of the water, all minus Jean.
Right.
So Wolverine and Scott desperately like dive back in the water to look for her. They can't find her. But and again, just like the comic book, there's a bubbling and she bursts out of the river.
She,
there
shoots up out of the water,
right?
Yeah.
In a brand new costume.
I have a lot of issues with this costume.
Really?
Yeah.
This is an iconic costume here.
I know that, but it looks just like Rogue's costume. It's her colors. It's her same, like, hair, like, crazy red hair flying everywhere.
Yeah.
To me, it's, like, too close.
Okay.
I don't like it.
So that's just the impression you always had with the costume.
I always thought it was just too close to Rogue's, like, colors and look.
Well, I mean, that you know... this costume predates the Rogue appearance and costume in the comic books.
Right, so they should have given OG. Rogue something different, really.
Well, I mean, Rogue's 90s costume, which she had in the comic and in the show, it is the same colors, but it's not the same.
The design is a little different, but it's... there's just so many colors to choose from, that's all I'm saying.
It's a yellow and green spandex outfit.
It's like mostly green,
right?
A
so I can
bit
see
yellow,
you as a
little
kid,
bit black,
right? You as
crazy
a
crazy red hair,
right?
And right, yeah. As a kid, like watching them, like part of the reason that they give superheroes these iconic colors is so that you differentiate.
And it stuck out to you, right? As a kid, yeah, they're similar. Yeah.
Yeah,
I can see that being a little confusing, but you know, we do have to. We can't, as comic book nerds, we cannot alter these iconic comic books that much to distinguish for our television shows.
Right.
So we have to accept the similarity in costumes. But hey, but Rogue's not even in this episode, and she wasn't in the last one.
I know,
one.
That makes it even more, like, whatever.
Well, if you don't like these colors, just wait a few episodes and
her
costume's going to be totally different again.
That's true, that's so true.
And then and the second costume's going to be more iconic than the first one, probably.
Also true.
Okay. So she comes out of the water, and what does she say?
I don't remember. What does she say?
You don't remember? The most iconic line. I am Phoenix!
Oh, that's it?
Yeah.
Okay.
Actually, in the comic, she has like more of a speech or something when she comes out. She says that. That's like the great line.
Yeah.
And it's also the famous comic book cover, too, where she's bursting out of the water. It's a real iconic imagery. It's awesome, but the show just like rips it straight from these like totally classic comic books.
Mm-hmm.
And so she's actually in the comics, she says something like, "I am eternal light, I am fire," like, I don't know, something insane. She has a whole speech before she falls back in the ocean,
right?
And then here it's a little more tastefully edited, I guess. It's weird enough that she says "I am Phoenix,"
yeah,
and has a whole new costume. And interestingly, and then, you know, Jean's, like, sent right to the hospital. They show the space shuttle being lifted out of the harbor on television, and Beast later mentions everything's being denied and there's a cover-up underway.
Mm-hmm.
I thought it was funny, like, they left out one detail from the comics that me as a kid, I actually did read the comic first before I saw this cartoon. But anyway, like, I liked in the comic how they're asking her, "Where do you get the costume from?" That question might have been, like, something worth, like, asking in this episode as well, but they don't really get into that.
Well, what's the answer?
Well, in the comic, she doesn't know. I mean, like,
right, so
they have a similar conversation where they ask her, it's like, "What happened? Like, you know, who's Phoenix? Like, what's going on?" She's like, "I don't know. I don't remember."
Right.
She's got amnesia.
Right.
A little bit. But she doesn't, not really. She remembers a little bit, though.
Right, but she doesn't know, like, the whole story with the Phoenix. She doesn't know, yeah, like, what happened to her, really, so...
She does mention that she feels she can reach out to the moon and crush it in her hand.
Yeah.
Which I think is, like, foreshadowing slash, like, a bad sign to all the X-Men.
But she looks so, like, serene when she says it that
does
nobody...
Doesn't it, like, her eyes, like, catch on fire at that moment, too, and she's kind of her... Or power's coursing through
but
her hand?
But it's, like, the way she's telling it is, like, dreamlike, sort of, you know?
She seems possessed.
Yes.
Which is kind of actually a good
kind of
description
accurate
of what's going on.
Yeah.
So anyway, she's in the hospital. The X-Men are in their street clothes visiting her. They have no idea what's going on. In terms of street clothes, it's worth mentioning that Beast is wearing a Howard the Duck t-shirt.
Yeah.
Which, now that I think about it, and this shows the level of research we put into the show, I think Beast is wearing that in the comic as well.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because Howard the Duck was hot at the time in the late 70s, early 80s.
Inexplicably.
Yeah, he was, like, the most popular, like, character, not just in comic books, but maybe in pop culture at the time. Like,
right.
It was, like, a weird, like... He was, like, the next Mickey Mouse, briefly. And they even made a movie that George Lucas produced that was horrible.
Yeah.
I've actually never seen it.
That was probably the downfall of
character. And, yeah, probably, yeah. It just, it was, like, a thing, it was, like, a real weird trend, mm-hmm, that existed at the time. And, anyway, Howard the Duck reference, pretty weird. And they've jokingly brought him back in the Guardians of the Galaxy movies. He's, like,
right,
a weird little cameo. Which I always thought was weird because the CGI in Howard the Duck in the Guardians movies, mm-hmm, looks fucking terrible.
Yeah.
It looks like CGI, like, out of the, like, 90s. Just so bad.
Yeah. Well, but what did the George Lucas movie make,
well, that was
look
like a Muppet.
You know? So, like, are they trying to, like, mimic that? Or
No. I just think that it's totally two different things.
Uh-huh.
I'm just... Well, in the George Lucas movie, it was, like, a disturbing, like, puppet, Muppet,
yeah,
animatronic thing.
Right.
That's kind of creepy. But in the Marvel movies, it's just, like, an ugly CGI cartoon.
Weird.
Yeah, very weird. Anyway, Howard the Duck reference, pretty strange. First of, I guess, two major Marvel cameos in this episode. We'll get to the other ones soon.
Yeah, okay.
Okay, so anyway, also worth mentioning, so Beast is kind of explaining what's going on. Like, he says there's a cover-up, and he says that other governments are, like, monitoring the vortex, which we saw from the last episode, the wormhole that Lilandra creates to get her spaceship through to our galaxy.
Mm-hmm.
So one thing was clear, a question we had from the last episode was they didn't mention NASA in the first episode. We thought maybe it was copyrighted or something, mm-hmm, that they can't really mention it. Here, Beast explicitly says NASA, so that's
right,
probably the answer to that. They just didn't talk about it the last time.
Yeah, right. They just didn't, right,
so it was
want
NASA,
to mention it by name for some reason.
Right. It was a NASA space mission. It was a NASA ship. It's,
yeah,
NASA. And then here's another little mirroring from the comic books. Cyclops and Professor X get into a big fight in the hallway about, like, the mission, and so, you know, Cyclops is really pissed because Jean almost died, and there's obviously something weirdly wrong with her.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, "What happened, Professor X? Why did we just do all this?
Yeah.
None of this makes sense." And the professor's like, "I don't know."
Right.
And then they get into a big fight about, you know, like, how could you send us on this mission without telling us what you know? And,
right. Well, because he's pissed because Jean, like, got hurt from it. You
right.
know, like, if everyone had come home fine, it wouldn't have been an issue. But,
yeah,
like, Professor X still just has no answers for him.
Yeah. And it's actually funny because in the comics, so they get into a little fight, but it's a reasonable fight.
Uh-huh.
In the comics, the fight is so much more intense between the professor and Cyclops. Like, the professor, I forget exactly the language he uses, but he calls him, like, basically a piece of shit. He's like, "Cyclops, you're not even in my class or league. you know, you know, you take orders from me, you suck, get out of my face. And Cyclops is, like, rightfully enraged by all this. And it's just, like, totally bizarre. And it seemed really out of character from Professor X. Actually, I don't know. Like, in the early runs of X-Men comics, Professor X's personality, like, goes between the sort of serene, like, Zen philosopher we see on this show.
Yeah.
And he also is, like, weirdly, he's, like, a weird, like, 60s man, sort of the Mad Men world, where he's, what's the word? He's misogynistic towards women at times.
Yeah.
He's real.
He's got a little more of, like, an edge.
Yeah, he's way more paternalistic in the comics and way more of just, like, you know, like, you're all children and you're all beneath me kind of thing. And, like, you know, so this, he had, like, a very weird personality in the early comics. So we get a little bit of that here, but it's a little more toned down tastefully, I believe.
Yeah.
So anyway, so as they're fighting, Beast, like, says, he's like, excuse me, gentlemen. He defuses the fight. He says, you know, a whole bunch of crazy shit's going on. And this is a direct quote, by the way. A whole bunch of crazy shit's going on. And I've got these mind control implants from the NASA space guys that Eric the Red captured. And I'm going to go examine them somewhere. And so everyone kind of shuts up and they remember that, like, something crazy is going on.
Right.
And Beast gives, like, that classic, like, behind his, like
over the shoulder look. He's, and, like, super excited about it.
Yeah, but he's also kind of admonishing them in a weird way when he says, fascinating.
Yeah.
He's saying, like, you guys, you know, you're missing out the big picture here.
Yeah.
So that's cool. And then we cut to Wolverine.
Right, right. This is amazing. Wolverine is in an alley across the street from the hospital, just punching things by himself. He's mad and he's punching and kicking the garbage cans.
Right.
And he's upset that Jean's hurt, and he's just taking out his anger.
Yeah.
In a lonesome way.
And again, it, very well done, very funny. I hate to keep bringing up the comic, but I find it interesting. In the comic, there's, like, some similar stuff going on with Wolverine. His character is finally really being drawn out at this point. You know, he was introduced to the X-Men only a few issues before, maybe, like, 5 or 7 issues before this. And he was just, like, a real gruff, like, Clint Eastwood-type maniac. And here, in the comic, he actually bought Jean Grey flowers. And he was going to give them to her at the hospital bed. But then he was surprised that everyone else, all the other X-Men and her friends, bought her flowers.
Oh.
So he's like, oh, that was stupid of me. And he throws the flowers in the trash can.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and I think that's kind of the first time he mentions that he loves Jean. Like, to himself, anyway.
Right.
So, So this is not quite like that, but something similar. And he also mentions that he hates hospitals and hates being inside them. And he's really, like, lamenting and feeling sad for himself.
Right. Well, that part happens here, too.
Right. No, I'm talking about in the cartoon now. Yeah, we're back to the cartoon. Yeah. So he's feeling really sad for himself. He pops his claws, and there's more dramatic music playing when he does it, which is always fun to see.
Right. And it's really funny because Beast, like, stumbles upon him and tries to cheer him up. And and so he, like, suggests a night out on the town together.
Beast basically asks, invites him to go dancing. And Wolverine says yes.
I know. It's so surprising.
He's like, how about you come to a nightclub with me and we could dance the night away? Wolverine's like, all right. And then Beast hails a cab, and what happens?
Well, he tries to hail a cab, but as soon as the cab driver sees him, he, like, speeds off.
Hits the
gas. He's,
like,
super frightened to see this big, hairy blue face.
And this is a great moment, right?
Right, totally.
Because in that moment, Wolverine sees that he's all lamenting for himself that he's got these claws and his whole life is fucked up.
Right. But, and Beast is like, why is it so hard to get a cab in New York?
Yeah.
Which is,
and he takes, Beast's problems are so much worse than Wolverine's, but he takes them with such grace.
Right.
And that's a key to Wolverine. You can see the glint in his eyes, like, okay, Beast, I'll be okay. I'm gonna calm down. I'm just gonna go off by myself.
Right.
And I love that. That's such great characterization.
Yeah.
That, you know, it's like Wolverine, it's a good lesson for kids. It's like, no matter how bad you might think you have it,
right.
There's always someone worse, and, you know, you've got, no matter how bad you have it, you have to, like, find a way through life kind of thing.
Right. Whatever your situation is, handle it with grace.
Right. And but it's the same. It's a shame we didn't get to see Beast and Wolverine go dancing together. Meanwhile, Professor X exits the hospital. He goes to the roof of the hospital where he's got his little mini X-Jet parked up there.
Yeah.
Which this little plane that the X-Men use in increasing fashion. And he gets into his plane and he's immediately attacked by this purple beam from outer space. And the beam, it's so powerful, it's lifting up the plane and sort of bobbing up and down, and Professor X is screaming, and the plane crashes back on the roof, mm-hmm. and Professor X is unconscious. And it's at this moment that the evil Professor X emerges from right. the subconscious of the passed out Professor X. How would you describe the evil Professor X, if you could?
He's like Professor X.
Right.
But more evil. Sorry. He wears a cape. That's how you know he's evil.
And, you know, and he's got, like, a teal and yellow outfit. A pretty ugly, like, weird color combination going on there.
I don't know. I mean, he also...
He's got one of those old-timey capes, like a British cape that Sherlock Holmes might wear. With, like, a gold chain connecting it.
Right, yeah. Or a brooch or something. I don't know what. Yeah. He also has function of his legs, but he doesn't, like, walk places. He just floats around because right. he's kind of a phantasm or something.
Yes.
And, but, like, you see his full legs extended. He's not in, like, a ghost wheelchair. Yeah.
You know, it's funny. I've been watching a lot of Seinfeld in preparation for the new Curb Your Enthusiasm season. Speaking of New York things. And there's the episode where Jerry sees Frank Costanza, George's father, in the city with a random man wearing a cape.
Yeah, that's right.
And Jerry and Elaine see this, and they're just so terrified, they don't even want to approach them. It's like, why is that man wearing a cape? And by the way, the man turns out to be Larry David in, like, a cameo from the 90s. You wouldn't have known it was him at the time.
Right.
But it's just so funny. you know, it's Frank Costanza's lawyer, it turns out, and it's just a hilarious episode. And the episode ends where a woman is about to commit suicide, but she's saved by Larry David / the mysterious man in the cape, and she's about to jump over the Brooklyn Bridge, Larry David reaches out to her, and the woman's like, who are you? He's like, I'm Frank Costanza's lawyer. Come with me. And he saves her. And there's just something going on with the bald man with the cape in New York City, the Brooklyn Bridge at night. You know, there's a whole lot of New York things going on. That episode and this episode are weird cousins in my mind. I think it's totally worth mentioning the story. And a nice plug for Curb Your Enthusiasm.
Why not?
Yeah, why not? All right, so anyway, evil Professor X has been set loose, cape and all. And his first target is Wolverine, who's just kind of hanging out in the subway.
Right.
You had some funny things to say about this.
That was also amazing. This is a really good Wolverine.
You really liked episode. This episode, didn't you?
I really liked this episode. Wolverine is standing super awkwardly in the subway by himself. He's like uh-huh. holding on to one of those straps from the ceiling with one hand, uh-huh. and the other hand is just casually placed on his hip. And, like, I don't know why, but there's just, like, something really hilarious about, like, Wolverine just riding the subway.
When we were watching this together, and you just started bursting out laughing. I had no idea why. I guess you're just going to have to watch the episode yourself and see how Wolverine's,
because,
like, holding his,
like,
carriage as he's riding
this, like,
the subway.
He's, like, super, like, muscular man. He's, like, shining from, like, the animation stylings uh-huh. of this season. Imagining if you yourself are riding the subway and you see this guy on the train, it's uh-huh. like, you sure as hell are gonna let him have his own train car yeah. ride in by himself.
I've never seen a person in real life with Wolverine's hairstyle other than Hugh Jackman in the movies,
right?
Which is funny. Like, no, I mean, do people really have the wingtip hairstyle, or that's just too insane for fashion? For
I feel like I have
humanity.
Seen that in real life,
really,
yeah. Probably on the New York City subway. Yeah,
would not be surprised. So anyway, evil Professor X is playing his tricks. First, he makes Wolverine see Yuriko in a different subway car. Mm-hmm. And Yuriko, we just saw in a previous few episodes ago, is Lady Deathstrike, one of Wolverine's lost loves.
Right. So we know that it can't actually be her because she's right. now Lady Deathstrike right. and looks significantly different.
But Wolverine's mind is very easy to mess with, especially yeah. when you're attacking his emotional past. So he goes, he's chasing after Yuriko, and then when he gets into the other subway car, he's attacked by Sabretooth out of nowhere. Mm-hmm. And he's all ready for a fight with Sabretooth. Sabretooth disappears, and then Wolverine is attacked by the second cameo, Marvel cameo of this episode, Deadpool.
Right.
An appearance by Deadpool, a newly created character, technically, by the mid-90s. I forget when Deadpool premiered in the comics, probably the early 90s. Mm. So it's funny, this is the second time Deadpool showed up on the show. I don't remember.
A little cross-promotion, maybe.
Well, for the comics, yeah. not for, like, any other media.
Yeah.
Right. It was, like, it would be many a year before Deadpool would really get into the public consciousness with those movies.
Right.
Probably a few more years before he got really popular as the comic itself as well. Mm-hmm. But anyway, right, so Deadpool's there, he's shooting at Wolverine. Wolverine's sort of blown off the subway car by Deadpool's laser blasts. And after that happens, Wolverine sees Jubilee tied up on the subway tracks.
Right. And then, meanwhile, like, Deadpool is kind of like...
Well, he's gone now.
Phased into Evil Professor
X. Yes, yes, that's right.
So we see Evil Professor X, like, float out from the subway.
With a big silvery futuristic gun.
Right.
And he shoots Wolverine with it, but he shoots paste at his feet.
Yeah.
Which is funny.
Right.
And then Wolverine's trying to get... He's stuck in the subway tracks. The train's coming. Jubilee's about to be run over. He gets out, saves Jubilee in nick time, but it turns out Jubilee was also an illusion.
Right.
So some weird stuff's going on.
Yeah.
Huh. sorry, just catching my breath. And now we cut the action cuts, and then Wolverine has a great line. He says, "Next time, I'll walk." and then we cut to Gambit and Jubilee. They're in line for a Broadway show, and Gambit's hitting on some lady.
Right.
And Jubilee's
I don't remember, like, sad
about it.
Yeah. Well, Jubilee, you know, wanted Gambit to, like, hang out with her. She wanted a friend, but, like...
He's like, this night's not gonna last that long with you, Jubilee. I botched that, but basically saying, like, after I'm done with you, I'm gonna go with this lady.
Right. Well, he's not on a date with Jubilee. No. He's just hanging out with her. Yeah. He wants to, like, have a date. I don't really remember him being this much of a ladies man when, like, from watching No, I mean, I'm sure he is, but, like, when I was a kid, I think, like, a lot of that type of stuff, like, probably went over my head, because I don't remember that as part of Gambit's characterization from watching the series as a kid, but...
Yeah.
But there it is.
Yeah, there it is. And then... but then Evil Professor X comes and starts attacking them, the whole crowd scatters, and, you know, Jubilee and Gambit are fighting him, and he's... Professor X is violently attacking them, and I thought it was funny that Jubilee's first reaction after being, like, almost exploded says something like, "Professor X, he's walking." It's like, okay, that's your reaction?
Yeah.
Not that, like, "Professor X, you're killing us."
Right.
And then Wolverine, you know, he runs onto the scene. He explains, you know, that's not really Professor X because I can't smell him. You know?
Right.
And Gambit's, you know, fighting him with the rock he picks off of the ground. I love when Gambit finds just objects and charges them with his energy that aren't playing cards.
Yeah, it's really cool.
Yeah, he's like, "Take this, Monsieur Ghost," and totally
like
doesn't
lobs
work.
It at him.
Right, it doesn't work. There's a lot of explosions. Professor X is insulting all his mutant friends. He says, "Gambit, you know, you cannot be trusted. That's why you must be eliminated." And then he says something else to them. He says, "I created the X-Men, and what I create, I can destroy."
Right.
And he's...
Which, like...
Yeah.
I feel like that's a weak line.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Like, you didn't create them as people. You created the organization that right. binds them.
Yeah.
You can destroy that bind of organization that
right.
does not entirely
But he's just trying to kill
destroy
them.
Destroy the people.
Right, yeah. It's not the same thing. He's not trying to end the X-Men.
Right.
He's trying to kill these individuals that are members of the X-Men.
I understand that's not the point of that dialogue,
like... And then cut to our friend Storm, who's been meditating on top of the Brooklyn Bridge.
Right, like Spider-Man. Spider-Man always hangs out on top of the Brooklyn Bridge, too.
Yeah, but he's usually hanging out. Storm is meditating. She's got her legs crossed and, like, with her eyes closed.
Everybody hangs out a different way, okay?
I know, but when Spider-Man's on top of the Brooklyn Bridge, he's usually thinking about his love life and, you know, like swinging around or
you
something.
You don't know what Storm's thinking about up there.
It's fine, but I'm just saying that she's purposefully meditating.
Anyway,
that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
And so she, you know, she's alerted to some problem. She flies over there, and Professor, you know... A million cops come, and Professor X disappears at this time, and the cops all have their guns pointed at Jubilee, Gambit, and Wolverine,
mm-hmm.
and they're ready to arrest them. Wolverine's ready to kill them all. He pops his claws.
Right, and they're trying to say, like, "Oh, it's Professor X, it's not us. Like, it's that guy."
Right.
But then it becomes apparent that, like, the cops can't see him.
That's not going to be a good defense.
Right. He, like, fades away into nothing, and, you know, then...
But Storm, again, her life-saving mist comes and blinds everybody.
Right.
So they're able to make a quick getaway. And then Evil Professor X makes his last appearance at the hospital, where he confronts Cyclops, and they get into a fight. And Professor X is, like, using a pink force beam to push Cyclops out the window. slowly. Mm-hmm. But Jean wakes up from her coma or her rest or whatever, and she easily dispatches this evil Professor X.
Right.
And
surprising, yeah. again, because evil Professor X has so far shown that he's really powerful.
Right.
And Jean Grey is normally...
She's not in Professor X's league normally.
Right, exactly. Right.
So we don't know if this is her, like, regular psychic powers that dispatches this or her new Phoenix powers.
Right.
Because Jean seems kind of normal in this moment. Mm-hmm. So, all right. So evil Professor X, till we meet again. He's gone for now. And then, you know, Jean says she discovers that the professor's unconscious on the roof in his crashed plane. The X-Men gather up there. They release the professor. He explains that... Now, I want to talk about this. He says, everyone has a dark side, and my dark side was unleashed from my subconscious, you know, uh-huh. that represents the repressed urges we all have, the evil urges.
Yeah.
And how true is this? Is there, like, in your... If I knock you out in the right way, uh-huh. is there, like, this evil Sonya that could emerge? Like, maybe not in a psychic projection, but, like, you wake up and you're, like, the evil Sonya that wants to kill people and, like, ruin our relationship?
That's, like, some soap opera stuff, you know?
Oh,
that's right,
that's
up there
real
with, like...
psychology?
Amnesia and whatever. Well...
Well, amnesia's real.
Yeah, I know, but I'm saying it's, like, a common trope,
right,
you know,
yeah.
for... soap opera drama.
But I believe this as a kid.
Amping up the drama.
I believe that this was true. That, like, we all have dark, like, alter egos, like, maybe, lurking in our subconscious.
I mean, I think you're reading into it a little too literally, right? Isn't the point... He's saying that all of us have things in our personalities that are, like, less than stellar, right? Obviously, every single person has, like, negative qualities or, like,
but
negative thoughts or something.
But do they coalesce into a singular... personality that...
Well, sometimes you get cranky and then those things come out and you don't have to have a psychic projection. You're just everyone's an asshole sometimes.
There's a difference between being cranky and being an asshole sometimes and having, like, an alter ego that is murderous and, like, off the chain insane.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's
the
question.
So you think Professor X is, like, making too many excuses for himself?
I don't know. I feel like he's presenting a psychological, like, opinion that he's representing as some kind of universal fact.
But
and
as a kid,
I just blindly assumed that, oh, that might be true, that in our subconscious, there's the opposite version of ourselves, you know? Uh-huh. Like, the evil version, like, somewhere, like a dangerous being.
Yeah.
It's like, and then and in my mind, it says, oh, that makes sense, because it's like, the
because
opposite would only...
real.
Well, yeah, there's that. But also the opposite... If you are everything that is true about yourself,
uh-huh.
then that means that there's a perfectly identical opposite.
No.
And it would only exist in you.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
Right, yeah. Uh-huh. But now as I talk about this all out loud, it seems like total bullshit.
This is why you're a philosophy major in school.
Right. And fat lot of good that did me.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Well, maybe it's different for... Professor X and it is for normal humans because of his, like, psychic abilities.
Right.
Maybe that's the reason that his alter ego can coalesce into an outside being.
I wonder if this is, like, some, like, slightly insulting thing to people that actually have split personality disorder or multiple personalities. You know, it's almost like they're playing with that mental illness thing in a way, in a sci-fi trope.
I don't know a lot about schizophrenia or, like, multiple right. personalities, but I don't think that's the way it works.
Yeah,
I mean,
probably not.
No, I mean, I don't think it's that, like, there's an evil side and a normal side or something like that. I think it's, like, the personalities are quite different and distinct from each other.
Hmm. Well, okay. Well, we don't know.
Yeah.
No. But anyway, back to the show. Professor X decides, because of his mental troubles, that he's going to head off to the only place where he can sort of rest and recuperate,
mm-hmm.
Which is Muir Island.
Right, with his old buddy Moira.
Moira McTaggart, a really yeah. hard name to say if you have a podcast. So we've seen Muir Island before in season one, most famously, where the X-Men are dealing with the Cure and Apocalypse and a whole bunch of great episodes.
Yeah.
We talked about that before. So Moira McTaggart runs the sort of the mutant research laboratory place. And she's like an old love of Professor X. So he's flying off there to get some R&R. And when he arrives, he's a little taken aback at first
mm-hmm.
because he discovers that Moira has a new boyfriend.
Fiance,
a fiance who is neither bald nor confined to a wheelchair. He has quite luscious blonde locks and can walk around.
Yep.
And actually, later we'll discover he can fly.
Right.
So he's really great. Her boyfriend is Sean Cassidy of Banshee fame.
Right.
I love that the show brings Banshee into this, as a cameo here, into the Phoenix saga. Mm-hmm. Because he was sort of a prominent character in the Phoenix comic books. But in that aspect, he was a full member of the team. So here they rewrite him as a cameo, and they do it to introduce some interesting plot lines that they want to continue to use from the comic books that revolve around Banshee. Mm. So it's funny to see Professor X a little miffed about Moira's new love situation.
Right.
He's very curt.
Was that like... Were they actually together? Was it a whole relationship, or was she just like a love interest?
It's never really shown yet in the show.
Okay.
I forget if they talk about it later,
yeah,
but it's implied.
Right.
That they used to have a thing. And, okay, you know, and the movies go into that as well. And
yeah,
it's in the comic books too. But anyway, so he's not like, he thought he was just going to see Moira alone. He doesn't even want to like meet this guy, Sean
right.
Cassidy.
This adds like a whole new level of stress to his little like getaway.
Which is funny. I wonder if the professor can instantly tell if Sean Cassidy is a mutant.
Oh, yeah.
Because, like, he must be able to.
But it doesn't make a difference to him, really. It's like...
I don't know, because...
Moira's attached now. Like, that's the thing that he's stressed about. He doesn't care if this guy's a mutant or not,
but
right?
Wouldn't he care, though?
Why?
Because he's Professor X, and...
So what? What difference does
he make? He's interested in meeting mutants and being around mutants and being all about mutants and stuff.
Not every single mutant, though, necessarily.
I know, but I still think that he might... It might have registered an alarm bell with him that this guy's a mutant, and... They might have had a moment, but he just totally ignores him.
Yeah.
And he goes right to his quarters. And there's a funny, like, scene where Sean and Moira are talking about this, how Sean asks Moira, does he still love you, Moira?
Yeah.
They've got really deep, thick Irish accents. And she's like, I don't know. How did she say it? I didn't know. Something like that.
I didn't know.
Yeah. And this is really funny to me, because then they just start making out. And while they're making out, literally like 10 feet away from them, a massive psychic beam comes crashing into the walls of her facility.
Right.
And it starts...
They don't notice at all.
Yeah, they're just making out.
Yeah.
And it starts attacking Professor X to the point where he's sort of floating out of his chair.
Right. And this is the same, like, kind of experience that he's had in the past, but he had been, like, really resisting...
Yeah.
Lalandra, but right. Like,
he has a great line here.
Yeah,
he says, "You are driving me insane, but I must not fight you." So, and then
I think you could have like a whole separate podcast where you just reenact all the episodes doing all the voices line for line.
I mean, that's
just
a good
one man show.
That's a good 40% of what this podcast is anyway. Trust me, folks at home, there's nothing more that I'd love for Sonya to start doing some voices, but I think her bashfulness is too strong.
My acting ability just isn't up to par with yours.
That's not true. She's just too afraid to do it on the microphone. Anyway, so Lalandra finally appears, and this is such an awesome moment, in my opinion, because she's got her cool, like, bugs spacesuit on, because remember we talked about in the last episode her spaceship kind of looked like a fly's head or something.
Right, it was, yeah, like the bulging eyeballs.
Right, and her space helmet looks like that too.
Yeah, it matches.
Right, but now she finally takes off her space helmet, and this is all sort of from the comics too, which is awesome.
Mm-hmm.
Well, at least the look of it.
Yeah,
and she starts speaking, and she's like, "Hello, I'm Lalandra." Not to keep doing the radio play, but her voice has this awesome modulation on it.
Yeah.
Right?
You can't act your way into that one, sorry.
Not if I put some special effects on our thing here. But yeah, I mean, I just love this vocal modulation. It's such a great sound editing choice.
Yeah, it's true. It's really cool.
It's so, like, her voice is so ethereal and alien at the same time, but
right.
Really sort of like...
But she speaks English.
Right, and also kind of erotic in a way.
Hmm.
Yeah, and she looks really good, too. She's a sexy, like, alien woman.
Yeah, she has her, like, silver spacesuit on.
Right, but she takes that off quickly.
Her pyramid haircut. What more could you ask?
Well, she's got her, like, tight, like, weird alien bathing suit formal attire, too. I mean, so the Shi'ar, and she's of the Shi'ar.
Right.
So the Shi'ar people are these weird, like, mostly human-looking, but they have strange bird-like features.
Mm-hmm.
They've got these, like, weird feathery... Like, her hair might not be hair, it might be feathers.
Oh.
And she's got, like, other things coming out of her, like, leg, her calves, or maybe even her, like, her forearms.
Mm-hmm.
These, like, weird feathery things. So she's like a mostly human but kind of bird-like. So, and she starts talking. He's like, how have you gotten in contact with me? And she says something like, our culture believes that that from birth two people can be linked through a psychic bond that's deeper than love. And she's like, do you believe this? And he's like, I do.
Yeah. Well, what a coincidence, because not like 5 minutes before, he was like sitting around his room being like, I'm so lonely. Yeah.
Like, and he's just so upset that Mora has a fiance.
Right. Now this woman comes out of the sky being like, we are deeper than in love.
Right.
And he's like, okay.
Yeah. I always like thought that was really snobby. That's like the snobby side of Professor X, I find, too, that he like appreciates like the universe in such a deeper way. And here's this woman that she also has psychic powers, and she's sort of like confirming his prejudices that he secretly holds about everyone else, that he's like above and higher than, you know, than the rest right. of the losers in the galaxy.
Right.
That they have a bond that's deeper than love. Like spitting on everyone else that has, you know, love.
Just regular love.
Regular love, right. And then so Lilandra and her cool modulated voice, which we'll have to see in the future episodes if they keep the modulation. I think they drop it after this episode, which I find
to be... Oh, that's too bad.
Well, we have to see. I don't remember, but I suspect it's only in this episode.
Okay.
Yeah, I think that's a big mistake if they do, because it's so cool.
Yeah.
Anyway, she explains like more of the backstory. We've gotten taste of it with Eric the Red, but she says that, you know, my brother's the emperor of the Shi'ar Empire, and it's in a galaxy next to yours, more or less. So we learned that it's not the same galaxy. We asked that question in the last episode.
Mm-hmm.
This is like an adjacent galaxy. And, you know, he has decided to steal this thing called the M-Kron crystal, not the Macron crystal, as it's been pronounced in other media I've seen.
Yeah.
You pronounce it M-Kron. This is a show that establishes the pronunciation. I don't care what Chris Claremont might say about it. I don't know what his official take is on the pronunciation. I like the way M-Kron sounds compared to Macron.
That the letter M is pronounced as M.
Yes,
yeah.
Definitely. So it's this crystal that apparently they keep in this like Shi'ar temple that's the most sacred in all of the world of Shi'ar. It's just been sitting there. But apparently this crystal has the power to, like, destroy the universe or at least several galaxies. At least their galaxy and the adjacent one, ours, the Milky Way.
Right.
So, but her brother, who's the emperor, goes, she says he's mad, gone insane. He decides to steal the crystal and use it for his own ends to increase his power.
Mm-hmm.
And she's decided to steal the crystal from the temple and escape with it, and that's where why she's here now on Earth. So that's the whole backstory, and that's the whole plot of the Phoenix Saga, the good Phoenix Saga as we know it.
Right.
And then just before we finish up here, Juggernaut, of all characters, blasts through the door and starts laughing. He says, oh, hello, Lilandra. Like, he knows who
right,
she is.
Right, he knows her, right.
Right, which is really funny.
Yeah.
And that's also sort of tied in the comics, so Juggernaut appears around this time, too, in the timeline of the comics.
I just find that it's, like, quite convenient that she... So they show, like... her brother's like destruction of like some of the planets and stuff in his own galaxy, I guess.
Well, that's a vision of things to come. The destruction
right.
hasn't happened yet.
And they show like on this one planet that's being destroyed, all of like the inhabitants are scurrying away, and they're all these like praying mantis or like grasshopper yeah. people, right? Yeah. So there's this vision of like these other planets having these bug creatures on them.
Yeah.
How convenient for Professor X that his deeper-than-love connection is with a humanoid-type alien. Yeah,
well, this is the case in any movie where there's aliens that are of human form.
Right.
I mean, to me, it's like if I was writing the next Superman movie, and Superman's like, I'm not from Earth, I'm from the planet Krypton. The first fucking question that Lois Lane has to ask is, but you look like a human being.
Right. And those alien beings are always just like... really good-looking versions
yeah.
of, like, humanoid creatures,
right?
Like,
yeah.
what would happen if Superman was, like, a kind of, like, dumpy version
yeah.
of a human?
Or for
like,
the purposes of this episode, if Lalandra's like, we have a badness deeper than love, as her, like, four eyeballs were dripping on the floor.
Right. Like, it just doesn't play the same way, you know?
Yeah. But, you know, it's this is the Star Trek... ness of X-Men.
Right.
The X-Men, I think, were very heavily influenced by Star Trek and Star Wars, because I think the Phoenix comics were written around the time of Star Wars, too.
Yeah.
But, like, the idea of, you know, Star Trek, where Captain Kirk would go and visit a, you know, some planet with beautiful green women, you know, the only difference is their skin's green or something, and their
right.
hair's purple, you
right.
know.
And that still happens in right. all the Star Trek movies
yeah.
today.
Yeah.
You know?
So, you know, it makes space travel fun.
Aliens, they're just like us.
They're sexy, but just different colored. That's where the episode ends, on another cliffhanger. You mentioned you really liked this episode.
I did. I really liked this episode.
Yeah, this is a great episode.
I thought we got, like, really good little nuggets of character development for, like, pretty much everyone who appeared.
A lot of nice Professor X stuff, because he's really been either unconscious or lost in the jungle or, like, not involved in the show as much as he should have been. So he's really getting a centered role here.
Right, and a really dynamic episode with a lot of really, like, funny moments.
We really like the slice-of-life X-Men moments, so we're getting a lot of them in this season so far.
Yeah.
The X-Men out in town, going on dates, you know, seeing the city, you know, and not, like, the weird... They're not in downtown Westchester, New York. They're in New York City proper.
Right.
Which we like to see as well. You know, Storm meditating on top of the Brooklyn Bridge, things of that nature.
Yeah.
Yeah, so great episode. Really looking... really excited to... get to the middle episode, episode 3, next week. Now, I want to mention, before you go, you probably got a clue from the episode description before you downloaded. We actually recorded this one on Tuesday, October 3rd, earlier in the week. We usually record them on the weekend right before we release them, but we're actually going on a little trip this weekend, so we wanted to get this one done before we go. But also, we wanted to do this one quickly because we just saw The Gifted.
Right, the first episode.
The first episode of the new Fox X-Men inspired television show.
Mm-hmm.
I shouldn't use the word X-Men inspired. Mutant Universe World Place show. So, you know, we promised our fans that we would talk about it. So let's talk about it a little bit.
Well, what'd you think?
All right, I'll just summarize it with a letter grade. Okay. I gave it a B minus.
Yeah.
And that's not, like, a bad B minus. I mean, B minus is pretty good.
Okay.
You know, before the episode ended, I was going to give it, like, more of, like, a C minus.
Oh, you really like the end? That cliffhanger, huh?
Well, not so much the cliffhanger, but just... I like the way the last act resolved a lot of the action.
Are we doing spoilers? Yeah, right?
Yeah, let's do some spoilers. Yeah, okay. It's a total spoiler, so if you haven't watched the show and you're worried about being spoiled, you know, turn off the episode. When we've talked about the cartoon already, so that's what you're here for.
Right.
Good, but you're probably going to listen to this anyway. But spoiler. Maybe not. Yeah, okay, fine. But spoilers for those who haven't seen The Gifted. So the show, I read about it on Wikipedia. It's a world that takes place between... It's set in the X-Men cinematic universe, more or less. It takes place between Legion and Logan, it was described. It inhabits its own time slot. That's what Bryan Singer said. And Bryan Singer is one of the executive producers and creators of the show, and he directed the first episode.
Mm-hmm.
And you see in the credits a lot of familiar names we've seen. Simon Kernberg, who's going to direct and write the next X-Men movie, Dark Phoenix. And he's written some other X-Men's. Lauren Shuler Donner, who sort of controls the X-Men, like, cinematic rights. We see Stan Lee's name in the credits. Joe Quesada, who's one of the Marvel, like, creative bigwigs at the comic book. So a lot of familiar names in the credits.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, so it's like some, like, in between some nebulous world between the movies that we've seen and Legion, the other TV show. So, and they established in the show that no one knows where the X-Men are or the Brotherhood.
Right.
Which is sort of like Magneto's team, you know, not the Brotherhood of Evil Mutants, the Brotherhood, you know, because Evil Mutants we established in the other episode is silly to say. Well, I mean, they got rid of that in the X-Men 1 movie.
Yeah.
Right. So that's where the world takes place.
And so we're set up with a few mutant characters. Mm-hmm. Some familiar, some not.
Right. And Polaris, then, Thunderbird, Blink.
Right. And then we're also following a family that's seemingly normal. The mom and dad are regular people, but come to find out through the events of the episode that the two kids are mutants.
Right.
But we don't know them from the X-Men, do we?
I think they're wholly created original characters, probably.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I think that's a strong point of the show, that, like, they're building their character base from the beginning, and we have some familiar, some unfamiliar.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That seems to be a good mix.
I read that there's going to be, like, maybe some cameos from some more famous mutants going along, too. I don't know what that
would
means,
make sense.
But, like, yeah, we'll see.
Yeah. And I would say that, like, it moves along at a fair clip. Kind of like you said, I was expecting that this was going to be a show about, like, mutants together in high school, and I was, like, not that excited yeah, about that.
Me too.
But it turns out just that these two, the kids in this family that we're following, are high school aged.
Right.
And there's like a couple of scenes in the high school, but that seems to be the end of it. Like,
yeah. Well, we'll see. We don't really know. But it seems to be like a, it's a story more about society and the way the laws are set up in the society to be against mutants.
Right. So to me, like the one reason that I wouldn't say this show is like super awesome coming out of the gate is mainly just, to me, it has a little bit of like a YA feel to it. Yeah. Like the tone and the acting.
It's like a half step better than your typical WB fare.
Yeah.
But still very comparable to your, I don't know, like to your Arrow, to your Flash.
Right.
I like those shows. They're kind of fun, and I actually really enjoyed Arrow and Flash the first few seasons. I kind of fell off of it. But it's similar to those in a way. I feel like this has slightly more like network budget extravaganza.
Right, and the people behind it.
Right,
that you
they're
mentioned.
A little more like way into the X-Men world and a little more juiced with like Hollywood power.
Right, but again, it's only the first episode, so we gotta. Yeah. I feel like I want to give them a chance to
most first
to build it up a little bit.
Most first episodes of any show aren't great.
Right.
Yeah.
But that like kind of tone, acting, you know, finding your footing stuff aside.
Yeah.
There were some things in the show that I thought were really cool.
Yeah. I just want to mention that the two main parents are semi-famous.
Yeah, that's right. The dad was Bill in
from
True Blood.
Stephen Moyer, I think his name is.
Moyer. Like, yeah. The vampire.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And without the southern accent, which I found distracting.
Yeah. And actually, the mom in the show, she's also super
Amy
familiar.
Acker. She's from Angel.
Oh, yeah,
another,
that's right.
Another WB show of fame.
That's right. And she also had a southern accent when she was in Angel, right?
Yeah.
I kept expecting both of them to speak with a southern accent to each other, and neither of them have it. But
it's weird seeing that Bill the vampire guy actor stare at people, but one, not be a vampire, and two, not have the southern accent. I found that wholly distracting for some reason.
We'll get used to it.
Well, I don't know. Maybe he won't return.
Yeah, that's true. Maybe. Yeah.
If you saw the end of the episode.
Right. Yeah. But I did really like the use of... they're mentioning Sentinels already.
Right.
In this episode. What did they call it? The Sentinel Service or something?
Yeah. There's this federal agency of mainly police officer guys. They're called drones. Right. They have drones.
Robots.
Yeah.
And, like,
well, there's two scenes with the drones that... Like, one I thought was awesome. Like, the show kind of hooked me in a good way. You see... there's these drones, just regular drones flying in the sky, and they're like, oh, those are Sentinel drones. They're scanning for your driver, your car's vehicle. It can read the license plates, and they're just sort of hovering in the distance. I thought that was really creepy.
Yeah.
And very, like, ominous and, like...
Semi-realistic,
I thought. Yeah, like, that could be our dark
feature. Like, that could happen. Yeah.
And then, but then they show later there's the actual sort of little Sentinel, like, floor drones. And they were just, like, these creepy spider robots that are attacking the mutants. And I thought those were kind of, like, lame.
Yeah, that seemed less realistic to
me. Yeah. I know they're not going to do big... They're probably not going to do big, giant robot men.
Yeah.
Which is what we know the Sentinels being traditionally.
Right. But when they first introduced it as this government agency with, like, business cards that say Sentinel Service on it. Yeah. And there's, like, agents, you know. I kind of was like... It hooked me a little bit, and I was like, what are they going to do with the Sentinels to bring it into this, like, semi-real-life version?
Well, that's the coolest thing about the show, I think, is that it's showing... In the movies we've seen up to this point, there's always the threat of the government creating this, like, oppression against mutants, that the government was just about on the verge of, like, passing these laws that'd be really restrictive and, you know, oppressive towards mutant people.
Mm-hmm.
Or we saw the complete, like, horrible consequence where Sentinels have taken over the Earth and it's a dystopia.
Yeah.
So here it's, like, a middle in-between where it's, like, laws have been passed and they talk about various mutant, like, you know... Like, you've committed a crime or you've used your enhanced powers. That carries an extra sentence.
Yeah.
And then, you know, things like that. And, and they also talk about, like, Mexico's a safe haven.
Right.
But they allude to a wall separating the United States and Mexico that they either have to go over, under, or through in some cases.
Right.
Right. So the little details about the societal changes that have undergone since the emergence of mutants are fascinating. And that is a very fertile premise.
Yeah.
Which, of course, makes sense because the X-Men is one of the greatest like pieces of science fiction literature. You know, it's always been a great premise.
In our opinion.
Yeah, well many people's opinions.
Opinions, yeah.
But, you know, as far as this show goes, let me just put it this way. Legion, to me, is superior.
Yeah. I agree with that.
Yeah.
But Legion is like some kind of weird art project,
yeah.
You know? And like, we're both weirdos that are into that kind of like television viewing.
Well,
so.
I think most people that have a critical mind are into it. I mean, Legion was pretty praised by critics.
Right.
And
it was also
has
like,
its audience.
Right.
Yeah.
It was, yeah. It was a little more like dark and
adult,
innovative,
and,
maybe
right. And the way Legion is directed and edited, and the production design is in such a brilliant way.
Yeah,
it's got such a unique, beautiful style to it that's captivating in its own right.
Right.
This show, it's more traditional, but a little like it's more on the Arrow Flash side, as we said.
Right.
A little more that like. I don't
a little more
say,
digestible.
Right, yeah.
Yeah.
And with that goes in, like, my biggest distaste, and this is going to sound really shallow,
uh-huh.
But our two main mutant children,
yeah.
I find the look of the actors really distractingly bad.
Hmm.
Not that they're unattractive people. They're very, you know, fine-looking kids. But there's just something about them. They have that WB, you know, Canadian, like, weird Vancouver model look to them that I just dislike. You know, this is going to sound insane, but, like, the main boy kid that's a mutant.
Yeah.
He's got that stupid Justin Bieber shaggy haircut that I just fucking can't stand that young people have. I don't know why.
But that's what kids look like now.
Do they?
We just don't have, like, friends and relatives that are that age anymore.
I guess. You're probably right, but I hate that fucking haircut so much. It's so lame. And it's weird because I love the Beatles, and they've got haircuts sort of like that.
Yeah.
But theirs were a little cooler than whatever's going on now with these new younger. I feel like it's only a TV. I only see these kids with these haircuts on TV. I don't see it in real life.
I don't know.
I'm just going to. That's my hot take on that haircut. I've only ever seen it on television, and it annoys the shit out of me. I just always want to slap any boy that has that haircut. So that's strike number one. And his sister, who looks nothing like him. This family couldn't look. None of them look related to each other.
That's normal for TV.
No,
families.
No, some TV families look like each other.
I don't know.
We just watched a show. Our favorite show on television is *Halt and Catch Fire*, which, if you haven't watched, is to me one of the greatest.
Those kids don't look like their parents.
I think they do.
I don't think so.
Well, I don't know. Now I think about it, maybe right, but. Anyway, watch *Halt and Catch Fire*. That's an amazing fucking show. I wish we were doing a podcast about that as well. We're not smart enough to talk about it, though. Anyway, his sister, who I think one is like a bad actress, and I don't mean to like pile on her. Maybe she gets better as the series goes along. The first episode, you have to be much more forgiving.
Yeah.
In this first episode, she didn't make a good impression on me. Maybe it gets better.
Okay.
But I just feel bad. I don't know. Who knows who's listening to this? But I just don't like the way she looks. She looks like a perfect blonde television princess.
She looks too well-adjusted to be a mutant kid.
Yeah, it's just like I don't buy her future struggle of being an oppressed outcast from society.
Yeah.
And it doesn't have to do with her looks. You know, it's just, I think it's just a combination of her acting and her wardrobe or something. I don't
know. So it has everything to do with her looks.
Yeah. Well, I remember you agreeing with me as I was making these pronouncements as we were watching the show.
I agree that she looks like she's too well adjusted to be like a mutant kid that's going to have some real struggles in her life.
Her power looked really cool, though.
Her power is really cool.
She can like make these shields she explains that she can gather the air or water stuff and make like shields.
Yeah.
I thought that was really cool. At first I thought she was Armor, who's this relatively new character created by Joss Whedon from the comics.
Uh-huh.
That she creates like this armor around herself and she can mold it in ways where it, like, covers her limbs and can grow in these cool, like, halogen colors.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought that's what she was at first. But apparently she's something else altogether. But I just didn't like her. You know, and I really appreciate Amy Acker. I was a fan of Buffy and Angel.
Yeah.
So I like seeing her again. But, and she was fine.
Yeah.
And Stephen Moore was fine, I guess, too, as the Bill vampire guy. It was all right. And I liked all the mutants from the underground, like, mutant, like, railroad thing mm-hmm. going on. They were all pretty cool. But, you know, I don't know. Like I said, premise was really cool. That was, like, huge for me because I think they have a lot of potential to improve the show.
Yeah.
But the opening characters, I didn't like the way they acted so much. Forget about their looks. I think their acting just wasn't, like, so great. And I don't think the writing of their dialogue was so strong in the first one. It was a little too much of what you would expect that we've seen before other movies where they're kids discovering their powers.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the writing of the, like I said, the premise, the writing of the premise leads, like, who knows where this is going to go.
Yeah.
So I am excited to see the next episode. I don't know. Do you have any more thoughts on this? Like, what else struck you about it?
Yeah, I guess I agree that, I don't know. The writing itself, it seems to be kind of formulaic, like you
right.
said it. That's kind of that is the sticking point for me. It's like it doesn't feel like super new.
Yeah.
But yeah, we'll see where it goes. You know, I'm gonna stick with it for this
yeah.
season, and like I hope that they're able to like craft it into something that's gonna surprise us. I don't know.
Yeah, all these shows have potentials to evolve and get better.
Yeah.
You know, and lastly, I'll say this, and this is such a pointless desire, but I just wish the X-Men were in it, you know?
Yeah.
And it's like the same thing with that show Gotham.
Right.
You know, I don't care about Batman as a teenager or as a little boy. I want to see Batman. And these comic book things, I think, lend themselves to television shows so much better than they do movies.
Right, because the stories are really complex.
And you can tell a million of them.
Yeah.
They've got, there's a million blueprints written by a billion comic books. You can pull from any era of comic books. It's like they let the X-Men would make the greatest HBO drama ever, as would Batman.
Right.
But these movie studios do not want to take their biggest franchises and turn them into TV shows.
Mm-hmm.
One, they don't want to confuse the audiences. That's an excuse I've read. And two, they feel like it's a waste of money. I think they feel like they're going to get bigger profit from a movie franchise than they are from a television franchise.
I mean, they're probably right, you know?
Well,
like,
I don't know. I mean, what's the economy of television? I feel like if you have a massive television hit, wouldn't that also make hundreds of millions of dollars in advertising? I mean, we were talking about Seinfeld earlier, right? Seinfeld, it was a multi-billion dollar property in the end.
Yeah, but that's going to be hard to recreate now because there's so much good television being put out.
Fine, but you're telling me that if Warner Brothers announces, hey, guess what? We're doing Batman, the TV show, and we're getting these awesome creative directors that you know and love to make it. And it's going to be this, you know, and if we're doing it on HBO or, you know, so Netflix or something where they can have cursing and gritty adult themes and, they showed previews of what it's going to look like. You're not telling me that that wouldn't garner, like, insane fan interest and obsessive watching and endless merchandising potential?
I think it would have a run, and then people would be done with it. Whereas,
and then
like,
you could still have your movies. You could say, okay, we're doing the Batman TV show. It's its own thing, and then the Batman movies.
No, because it would run dry after a while. Right now, the way they have it set up, everyone is still paying lots of money,
yeah.
not just in America, but overseas, to go see the next Batman movie, because they're only putting them out...
Yes, movies.
Or whatever, Marvel movie, like
right.
all of these movies. They're
yeah.
only putting them out, what, like one or two a year. So,
that's
like,
still a higher clip
are,
than they ever used to be out.
It yeah. is, but people are still like running to the box office like to go see these movies. If it's on television, you pick and choose. Like, you're going to watch it for a while and then maybe you get bored.
Right.
And
well,
you know,
this is my pitch to Hollywood, because there's so much complaining about like the superhero genre in movies. It's overdone, it's stale. We've seen too many of them. It's an overkill.
Yeah.
Excuse me. This is what you really do. When you start your new relaunch, reslate, reboot of all the, once all your actors retire or quit, they get sick of it, right?
Okay.
Or the movies aren't popular. You start on television with what we described, the X-Men show, the Batman show, the Superman show, whatever.
Right.
You cast your cast, you give them, you know, big contracts, So they're committed, and you have the TV show go in its arc of 10 episodes, whatever it's going to be, 14 episodes, and then you have a movie every couple of years with all the characters that you've established on the TV show, the same actors, and the events of the show lead up to the movies. You cross-promote in that way. Mm-hmm. You throw tons of money behind everything that's going on. That would drive people nuts in a good way, in my opinion. And then you have this world where it's jumping between the serialized version, where you can get really deep into characterizations, details, backstories, little side stories that you otherwise can't tell in a movie. Mm-hmm. And then the movie itself is the big comic book event where you get your massive classic tales and where everything you've seen has left to it. And they do them in such a way where if you haven't maybe caught up on the TV show, you could still follow the movie, you make the movie so good that it inspires people. They go back to the TV show and become fans of it to catch up too.
I just think the whole enterprise is risky, though, because you still have Batman versus Superman type movies that'll come out and turns off a bunch of fans, and then you have this show. We're sitting around talking about it's too much like a WB show or whatever, CW show, whatever. You're gonna run a whole series like that.
But the reason it's a WB show is because they have to use crappier characters because they can't use the characters anyone likes. You can't have Wolverine, mm-hmm. can't have Cyclops or Professor X. So you're stuck with Polaris and Thunderbird and Blink.
Right.
So there's that element. The same thing goes with the WB shows. You can't...
CW, I think.
CW, right, yes. Yeah. dating myself. The CW shows, you can only have... in the Green Arrow and Flash universe, even though Gotham City exists, they can't travel to Gotham, and they're not going to fight the Joker.
Right.
Which would be cool. They're not going to fight the Riddler.
Right.
So all the Batman characters are off the table. And the same thing goes with the Supergirl show, which I also kind of like. She can't really cross into Superman's world too much, although I know they had crossovers with their own Superman.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, that was inspiring to me because that was sort of what I'm talking about. Just have a different Superman. Who cares?
Yeah.
But anyway, he's like a minor character as it is. And they water it down. They can't really make it great. Like when Superman shows up on Supergirl, he's only in a cameo for a few episodes. And then he has to go away for some reason. Mm-hmm. If this was the real DC... invested series of creative shit. Superman, the second he comes on the Supergirl show, it's the whole thing onto itself, and who knows what direction everything's going in.
Mm.
Probably in this case, you don't start with Supergirl. You would have started with Superman as a television show.
Yeah, right.
And then she's the side character.
Right.
But, it could have been cool the other way, too. Why does Superman have to come first? That's kind of misogynistic. But anyway, the point is...
Well, because he came first.
The point is, I have this vision that the ultimate way to do this would be to seamlessly have your biggest properties on television with incredible creative control and money,
mm-hmm.
and then those bleed into the movie events and then back to TV in a continuous thing. And I think that would be perfect for the superhero genre as a filmed thing.
Dream on.
Yeah. Yeah. And so, we'll keep watching The Gifted, and we'll mention it if it gets better or if there's something you want to say about it. I don't know.
Heartlessly.
Yeah. I mean, we're definitely going to jump back into Legion, too. When Legion comes back, we'll be talking about that as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, because that show I really liked.
Yeah.
That was the show. And
super
I mentioned
creepy.
We mentioned it on the very first episode.
Yeah.
That Legion was the show that inspired us to make this podcast.
Right.
Because we were watching it. It was great. But we're like, I want to see a TV show about the X-Men.
Yeah.
And the only choice
that's right.
was this show. So. And it's great.
Yeah.
But the dream is, for me anyway, live-action television X-Men. That's what I want one day.
Maybe you're going to have to make it yourself. I don't know.
Well, no, I'd have to buy Disney, Walt Disney, and Fox, merge the companies together, and then set this plan in motion. Because,
cool.
It's too complicated. All right, that's all we got, right?
Whew.
All right, woo, that's a lot of words.
I'm out
tonight.
Of words, yeah.
Yeah, but let's just say our goodbyes.
Please follow us on the Facebook group. Is that what you're going to say?
Yes. But you have to say it correctly.
The X-Men Task Facebook group.
X-Men Task Podcast Facebook
Damn.
Group. Yep.
Go.
The X-Men Task Podcast Facebook group. Follow me on Twitter at Willie Simpson. Rate and review us 5 stars on iTunes. It really goes a long way to helping us get exposure for the show. Not to be annoying about it, but you know, with the latest OS update for Apple, when you search out X-Men, it's just a generic search term. Before, you could like scroll like a few and find us. Now, like, they only show the top like 7 or so X-Men things, and we're not in the top 7 lamentably. So either you have to get us in that top 7 by writing and writing 5-star reviews for us, or you just have to tell all your friends. Like, I don't know how you're gonna do that, but let everyone know about us, so we can so everyone can hop on board here. We really love our fans, and we love all the support they give us, so it's always great to have more fans. And also follow go to xmentask.com and follow at xmentask. That's the Twitter and website run by Eric and Julia Leewald, original X-Men writers of the cartoon, and they're great people, and we love them. We always want to give them a shout out. Mm-hmm. So that's all we have for today. Join us next week for part 3 of the Phoenix Saga as Phoenix Month continues. That's all I got. How about you, Sonia?
Me too.
All right. Goodbye.